My name is Neha Asar. I'm a Los Angeles-based bridal mandi artist, and you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. So periodically on Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we share a spotlight conversation to feature brief chats with an individual from the community about a special topic or a unique endeavor. For this spotlight episode, I've been thinking a lot lately about cultural anchors and signatures of India and South Asia that are universally recognized with a rich tradition and are being presented and promoted to a modern audience within an evolving context. So it was truly great to learn more about Mehndi art and share a conversation with Los Angeles-based Mehndi artist and entrepreneur, Neha Asar. Neha has been practicing Mehndi art for 30 years, and what may have started as dreamy childhood doodling blossomed into a passionate skill set for the delicate, ornate, and often visually stunning art and craft of using Mehndi. While Neha has cultivated an expertise for bridal and wedding ceremonial Mehndi, she's perhaps taken this creativity and talent to reimagine Mehndi as the substrate for many other intersections that allow the intricacies and tradition of this art form and style to cross into different presentations, whether on clothing and fashion or homewares, or even sports memorabilia. Not surprisingly, Neha's expertise has been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Vogue magazine and spotlighted at the Grammys, Oscars, and Emmys. By the way, her clients have also included Kylie Jenner, LeBron, Shaq, Drake, and SZA, among others. We caught up to chat about everything Mehndi, from cultivating a relationship with the art to promoting cultural education and even AI. But first, I was curious to ask Neha about reflecting on her first Mehndi memory.
My first Mehndi art memory was when I was a child. You know, my parents took me back to India all the time, and I would get my Mehndi done at random restaurants or street corners, and I would watch like how the artist would draw on my hand.
Yeah.
And I would kind of get in their head a little bit and kind of see it, try to see it from their perspective. And they would leave gaps in my hands and, you know, maybe just some design that I really wasn't a fan of. And it would upset me because there's an inner artist in me, and I knew that, you know, if they're sitting here doing this, there may be some more potential. And then I wish they would just take their time. And so, you know, those kinds of little frustrations I would carry with me. And then, you know, that's what led me to kind of drawing Mehndi on paper with my pencil. And I did that for years as a kid.
Yeah. How old were you, by the way, when that first kind of trip to India came about, and you remember that first time that you were sitting there while someone was kind of going through this?
I was probably like 4 or 5 years old. Yeah, very young.
And as that sort of transpired, and you knew, or you realized some of the gaps or the frustrations there, and then you went to the sort of the second or third level, did those Mehndi memories, do they kind of stick with you today as to, like, you know, particularly how it has kind of informed you as you've gone along?
Yeah, I mean, I would draw on paper, you know, in class. I would just doodle all day, but I would cover sheets and sheets of paper from edge to edge, corner to corner, with my tight, like, intricate Mehndi designs.
Yeah.
And, you know, year after year, I would get like best artist in my class, or, you know. And it wasn't until freshman year of high school that I got an opportunity to actually hold a Mehndi cone and do it on someone professionally. So, you know, and then even through college, I would doodle on my paper. Like, it's just in me. Even when I had my corporate job, like, if I felt like I had to sketch something out, I would sketch it out. It just, it's like an energy that you just have to release.
Yeah. Well, and I'm imagining that that's a big form of how you probably communicate, most importantly, with yourself.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that you say that. I'm not real good at like putting my thoughts into words. And sometimes when I hear people say things like that, I'm like, oh, that really resonates. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so, and everyone, I think, thinks and problem solves a little bit differently. Have you sort of grown to be more of a visual problem solver? And then you find kind of those intricacies, either ways to kind of think differently, or it brings you a little bit of peace to in fact, get that out there and get it on paper or get it on in the artistic expression.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's therapeutic in a way. It brings clarity.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, when I always say when I'm drawing or doing my art, there's no real thoughts going through my head. And that's, it shuts that chatter off for me, which is huge. But at the same time, like being so precise without really thinking about it, it's just like so mechanical. Like my hand is just so used to doing its own thing. But I feel like, yeah, it definitely has that impact on me. Like it just shuts everything off.
Yeah.
Think in another way, like through my hand. It's really weird.
Yeah. It's almost like a different sanctuary or even yes. like a different plane that you're on that you're just kind of, I wouldn't say escape to, but you feel like you, again, communicate and exist in slightly a different way.
Definitely.
You know, because of the intricacy or the ornate nature of the art and the different motifs that you probably are living in, are you someone who has developed a kind of patient perfectionism when it comes to how you actually approach this entire experience?
For sure. I have a lot of patience and I'm definitely a perfectionist. I need it to be right. If it's not right, I'll work on it a million times over. Sometimes I don't even start until I perfect it in my mind. Mm. So it looks like procrastination or that I'm not being productive, but I'm actually really doing something. And it's in my head constantly. The wheels are turning. And when I execute it, I see exactly what's in my brain. And that's like the ultimate fulfillment.
Can that be frustrating perhaps for those around you who may not be patient perfectionists?
Yeah, I am sure it drives my family crazy.
Well, yeah. And is this something that initially when you were starting out, I mean, even going back to when you were four or when you were kind of doodling and drawing in high school to now doing this professionally, I mean, is this something that you iteratively have to practice? And even as you've developed the skill and the art, that your practice in fact grows with each kind of step and layer to that?
Yeah, I produce art every single day somehow, some way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do think there's a lot of conditioning, you know, when working with Mandy is so different than drawing with a pencil because there's pressure involved. You're drawing and pressing at the same time. So to maintain even pressure, there's definitely muscle memory that takes place in this area. And I've perfected it to the point where I even make my own Mandy and I make it so silky and so smooth that I don't have to apply so much pressure. So my hands don't get affected so much, you know? So it's like, I have that down to a science and then I just make sure I'm practicing all the time. Even when I'm painting, I'm using my Mandy cones.
Mm. Yeah.
So if it's not working on a bride, I'm painting and doing that. So the movement and the practice is there.
I'm waiting, by the way, for the Mandy design on the Air Jordan. So whenever that can come out, I'll hopefully be all over that.
I know. I mean, I'm waiting for a collab too. I'm constantly posting the Air Force Ones or Air Jordan, like whatever canvases I have, I'm constantly posting and tagging Nike, but no luck yet. Still waiting.
Hopefully soon. I'm curious about that one, at least. Like you mentioned that there is a patience, there is a perfectionist in you, and yet everyone makes mistakes, right? So how do you approach that now, especially with the, I wouldn't say aura, but the scope of the clients that you work with now compared to when you were first starting out? How do you deal with those kind of errors that perhaps even only you know about and still yet maintain poise and purpose and the careful thought behind being perfect?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I try really hard not to make mistakes.
Right.
I want to say I just don't make mistakes. Like in art, I don't think there are mistakes, first of all.
Sure.
Right? It's all your creation. And you're right. If there's a mistake or whatever, like no one's going to notice but the artist, because the person getting it done doesn't know the last thing about Mandy, really, right?
Sure.
But I literally don't make mistakes.
I guess they might be surprises for you in a way.
I mean, sometimes like I intend to draw a straight line and then automatically my wrist will just curve. And I'm like, okay, I trust that. Like I'll take the curve over the straight line. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Maybe my hand is thinking something like the brain. And
well, and is, by the way, is that your instinct kind of kicking in?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And it's also like the shape of the hand, right? Like maybe there's hands are curved. There's ridges and lines. And even up here, like, you know, maybe the flick of the wrist just goes a little curved. And to me, that's like, I'll take it, you know? But there was an instance, I was at my son's basketball practice and my sister was getting married like that week or something.
Sure.
And, you know, there's four of us in the family. There's five events. And so that means all four of us needed five outfits for the week, right? So 20 outfits. And you can just do the math and imagine how much money we were spending on all our clothes and jewelry and accessories, and et cetera. So for the wedding, I decided that I was going to paint my Lehenga and paint my husband's Sherwani, right? Now, how am I going to sit and like do this, you know, with such limited time? So I would take these pieces, like my whole Lehenga, I would take to basketball practice and paint there.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time I had.
Right.
And so there was a man who approached my area where I was working. And he's like, what if you mess up?
Right.
And I'm like, I just don't.
Yeah.
He was a doctor, actually. He asked me that. He's like, you know, what if you mess up? And I said, I don't mess up.
Yeah.
Because working with paint on fabric, there's no room for error.
Sure.
And I did a full intricate Mandi mandala from the waist all the way down to my feet. And it was this massive, like, I don't know, 2.5 feet mandala. And I mapped my entire husband's Sherwani to do, you know, to have the same design. And so, yeah, I like to say I don't mess up. I just don't.
I will say that you perhaps embody the title of this podcast, which is just got to trust yourself, right?
Yes, definitely.
I'm always curious about this one. What's the longest that you've had to sit, I mean, physically with a client?
13 hours.
Mm.
Yeah. I had a bride that went up to the biceps.
Yeah.
And all the way up to her knees. And everything was custom. And she also wanted the glitter embellishments on it. Thank God. I mean, I'm happy that glitter is not a thing anymore, really, as far as trends.
Right.
So that's out another couple hours, but 13 hours straight.
It's quite the workout. And I mean, mentally and sort of even physically challenging to really get exhausting. That going. But I'm sure there must be great gratification, obviously, for both you and her at the end of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, mainly as an art, of course, you know, it transcends obviously the bridal aspect or you know, just skin art pieces, but it's also representing such a rich tradition of artisans that, you know, global artisans for that matter, but particularly from India and of course, South Asia. How do you, and maybe by extension, those who experience your creations and whether they're celebrities or not for that matter, how do you feel and they feel perhaps connected to that living art?
You know, I recently worked on SZA, who's, you know, a singer and an entertainer. And she always describes it as like, it connects her to her childhood, you know, because she was raised Muslim and on Eid, they got their mehndi done at the masjid. And, you know, but she also expressed that it made her feel a special kind of pretty. And I can see that because when she wears my mehndi on the red carpet, she's constantly posing with her hands. Whereas normally people pose with their clothes or whatever, but she's like posing like this or got her hands all in the pictures. And I think that's, you know, it makes her just feel, it just makes her feel really pretty.
Yeah.
My other clients tend to tell me that it forces them to sit with themselves and be still, right? And that really embodies what Mandy is all about. Like we do it before the wedding. It's a laborious thing. It takes hours and hours, but the essential oils in the Mandy calm the bride down. It forces her to sit down in one place and not do anything.
Right.
And so some people just take it in stride. Like I'm getting my Mandy done for no reason at all, only because I need to be still with myself. And, you know, just embrace that quiet and downtime with nothing else. So to me, that's beautiful.
Do you have to serve as a counselor sometimes and help the peaceful therapy part there?
Oh, yeah. It's like being a hairdresser. People like spill their guts when they come to you. So imagine 8 hours of people spilling their guts.
Yeah, or 13 or however long that gets. And, you know, this is one that, of course, someone like SZA or Shaq or LeBron or any celebrity, or for that matter, any of your clients, regardless of who they are, helping to, in a way, kind of accelerate and showcase the prettiness or the tradition or the art itself is such a huge vehicle.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel that there's any risk of the cultural appropriation part where there may be some elements that are unexpected with that? Obviously, it's not the intention, but how do you reflect on that part?
I mean, trust me, I get a lot of backlash for the work that I do. I work on celebrities of all different ethnicities and backgrounds, and they get it done. And a lot of the South Asian community will be like, well, why did they get it done?
Right.
Were they going to a wedding? Were they, you know, and I'm like, no, they were going on vacation, or it was just a random Sunday morning, you know? I mean, I've spent random Sundays at LeBron's all the time just doing his wife and daughter. And,
sure.
You know, Shaquille O'Neal's family, they're going to Vegas for a basketball tournament. So all the five kids were going to be together. And so they all got it done, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and LA Fashion Week 2014, they gave me a nude model and I did Mandy all over her chest and dressed her in an Indian blouse. And I got so much backlash for that. It was like, this is, you know, inappropriate or whatever. But we have to understand that Mandy is not only limited to South Asia, right?
Yeah.
There's Mandy all over the world. I mean, it's been used all over the world for many years.
Right.
Where it's, whether it's like in the Arab countries or in Africa. And I personally feel like since it's an expression, it's an art expression, and it's used to adorn the body, I mean, why not explore where else it can be applied? And if it makes a woman feel beautiful or even a man feel beautiful, why not just do it? You know, I mean, whether it's on your hands or feet or chest or back or anything, I mean, it has a cooling effect. It's supposed to calm you down and it's beautiful. So to me, it's a showcase of our art and our creativity. And I think as the world grows and as time goes on, there's so much mixture in so many different cultures. And I think it's important for everyone to embrace the art and just see maybe their connection to it, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, wait, maybe in my culture we used it too. And I think it's important because it's a part of educating people about Mandy.
I remember I was I love that. And the idea that it's universal regardless of, you know, what the origins are. I remember I had a Turkish patient once and we were talking a lot about Mandy and you know, it's different kind of storytelling that goes along with it as well. So I think that's great that, and you know, is there some education involved then that for people to really sort of in a way kind of embrace that universality, even though obviously for you, it has a very different connection to your own background, to your own culture, to your own heritage.
Yeah, definitely. There's education about it. I mean, it. When I went to LeBron's house the first time, I'll tell you that his daughter was like, I want henna done, you know, and she's like, can you do a butterfly or a unicorn? And, you know, Savannah was so quick to shut that down. She was like, no, this is a traditional art form. Mm. She's going to do what's traditional. She's not here to do butterflies and unicorns. And I was doing Savannah's Mandy later, and she said, can you please hide LeBron's name in the Mandy? He really enjoys looking for his name.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the education needs to take place for sure. You need to learn the process of what it takes to actually make the Mandy. And then when you do the Mandy, it's like there's the education involves, you know, learning how long you got to keep it on. Not like, oh, I'm done with this. I need to wash it off now. And then have this light stain and be like, oh, it's my henna. No, like, there's so much care that needs to go into it. It's a process. And I think my clients really appreciate that because I bring that to the forefront and I let them know how important it is.
It sounds like some of your patient perfectionism kind of rubs off on them.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think they realize the attention to detail and how much time goes into it that they want to put in their time as well.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, to the novice, the work is so intricate, it's so ornate and almost delicate. So for you as an expert, like you mentioned that you've done this, you know, so many times and you've gained experience with this. I'm making the basketball analogy here that people who become experts in basketball will say that the game slows down or it like becomes simplified. Does it all at this point simplify or actually change, or do you find new complexities in things that you are like going in new directions or changing how you approach this? You know, do you experience that now differently compared to when you were first starting out?
I want to say that it doesn't become simpler for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing Mandy for 30 years, since 1994. For me, I have to stay relevant, right? As time goes on, I'm getting older, my brides are getting younger. So I have to stay relevant. And in order to do that, I have to constantly evolve and change the way I look at things. I need to know what's popular, what's not. I need to know what the brides want, what they don't want. For example, a lot of them don't like the filled fingertips, right?
Sure.
And if I'm 2024 offering filled fingertips, the chances are my clients are going to be like, eh, or potential clients are going to think twice before they come to me.
Yeah.
So I have to really evolve and stay on my toes. I don't think the game slows down for me. You know, people, the way I work now is that when I show up to my client's house, they present me with a full list of things they want incorporated into their Mandy. That's the first time I ever meet them. It's the first time we talk about design. So yeah, sometimes it's like, I want the Brooklyn Bridge and a portrait of my dog and our locker combination from high school. And so I take these things and on the fly, I'm executing how to incorporate these things into a bridal Mandy piece without each element sticking out like a sore thumb. So it's always challenging.
Yeah. You have to sort of be nimble, and maybe there's with the experience, you've found ways to actually flex and be more nimble as that occurs.
Yes.
So I have to ask you, you know, with that, you mentioned that, of course, it doesn't necessarily get simpler. The complexity maybe changes. And of course, you have to, again, flex up and down based upon the client or the project or even what your own conceptualization is. You know, AI is all around us. It's inescapable, yeah. Right? And like it or not, creating intricate and ornate and often just stunning and strangely beautiful duplications at scale is kind of, you know, what AI's jam is, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, how do you reflect perhaps on the role that AI inevitably plays in at least what people's perceptions are of art like this?
Yeah, I think AI definitely simplifies a lot of things, considering that you can make digitally created art on there. I feel like it makes art look really flat sometimes, depending on, because I've seen these AI generated pieces of art, right? It looks digitally created, it's printed, and I feel like it's something that you could put on whatever, mugs and things like that, right? At like Target or Home Goods, or, you know, I feel like you can scale it that way, or you can scale it as a mural on a wall or
right. Whatever.
I mean, it's there. I don't think it can replace fine art that's done by hand.
Right.
Handwork is always going to be original, and the little imperfections, whether it's like an uneven paisley versus an even paisley even next to each other, right? I mean, to me, there's beauty in that. And so I don't know, like maybe AI, if you program it the right way or ask for the right things, it may be able to generate that. I think it's inevitable, but like I said, you just got to stay on your game. And as long as you're producing the original art, there's really no comparison.
Well, and the relationship, of course, that you develop when something is handicrafted, when it's by an artisan.
Yeah.
You don't get a whole lot of storytelling and relationships with AI.
Exactly. And that I think is going to push the value of fine art up even more, right? Yeah. I hope.
And as well as ensuring that there is some longevity and in a way kind of legacy to making sure that the art and the tradition and the heritage stays in a way long-lived, but also that there's lots of innovation and evolution to it as well. Let me get you out of here on this. I'm sure people's, just like my own first reaction to your creations is just, you know, they're speechless. It's magical. They're really mesmerized. How do you hope it then evolves for them? After that first time that they've seen, you know, something, what kind of relationship do you want people to perhaps develop with this art form?
You know, predominantly my clients that I work with are brides, right? So I don't want them to have the mentality that this is the only time they're going to experience the art, right? Yeah. Maybe that's the only time they're going to get their hands and feet done with all the custom work. I don't anticipate them getting that done ever again. But because I've moved the Mandy onto so many different canvases, whether it's glassware, painting, apparel, sneakers, furniture, I just don't want them to stop the buck there. Like, I want them to feel moved by the artwork enough to where they're like, hey, this Mandy's going to disappear in 2 weeks, right?
Right.
How can I get something that's more tangible that, you know, still moves me in the same way and still means something to me, but something that I can keep forever? And so that was the premise of me kind of developing these items that I, you know, have on my website and whatnot. And so far, so good. I mean, people, you know, they buy their first home and they want like this intricate Ganesh painting or whatever, and I'll do it and they buy it. Or they want a piece of furniture or some sneakers for maybe their baby shower or something. So I think I'm starting that movement and I think people are seeing it and it's happening. So that's all I can ask for, is to just share my art with the world and have people experience it and feel moved by it.
Well, I know that people are you know, remaining mesmerized their first, their second, their third times. And certainly you're someone who's accelerating that process for them and really sharing this art form so beautifully. Neha, thank you so much for sharing a conversation with us. This was a real treat, and we wish you all the best.
Oh, thank you so much, Abe, for having me. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Neha. And please check out more at nehaasar.com. Shout out to Shruti Marathe for sparking the fuse on this one. And shout out to Cerritos in general. Thanks again for listening. And wherever you might be listening, of course, please don't forget to offer a kind rating or review for Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, and pass it along to your friends and family. And if you haven't noticed already, it's pretty simple. We're all connected and we're all human. Let's try and remember that every day. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.